Good morning and welcome to Shattering Myths. I am Yada. Each weekday here on GCN, we strive to expose the destructive and deadly myths that are associated with religion and politics, patriotism and the media, and with military and economic schemes. Our goal is to go beyond merely presenting the news to looking behind the headlines and to determine how these events are going to shape our world. Then, in the second hour, we will engage God on His terms through evidence and reason, since His is the lone reliable voice in what has become an exceedingly disingenuous world. Our phone number for those who would like to participate in this discussion at any time over the next 2 hours is 877-300-7645. On the eve of his military trial, accused Fort Hood shooter Major Nadal Hassan released a 7-page handwritten and typed sets of documents to Fox News. Now, you would think that having done so, they would have simply printed the documents. But no, Fox News didn't want you to see anything other than a few lines in which they even redacted those portions of it. Most of the documents include an acronym, SOA, which is considered shorthand for Soldier of Allah. You know, if they had written it, if he had written Allahu Akbar, they would have said, oh, that means God is great. But here they were able to figure it out that this is jihadist or mujahideen of Allah. And Allahu Akbar, for those who are unfamiliar, does not mean God is great. Nothing anywhere close to that. It means Allah, which is the name of Muhammad's wannabe God, is greater. And the is greater is essential to understand, because then you have to wonder, greater than whom? If he's God, whom would he be greater than? And when you look at the context of Muhammad first revealing Allahu Akbar, screaming it at the Jews that he was going to terrorize at Kabar, the answer becomes obvious. Allah wants to be greater than Yahweh. Hassan's business card also bears the distinction of SOA. It was found in his Texas apartment after the shooting. So he had decided that he didn't, even though he wanted to receive the payment as an officer in the U.S. military, that he business cards, he was going to be instead a soldier of Allah. Staff Sergeant Sean Manning, who was shot 6 times at Fort Hood on November 5th, 2009, which is, of course, interesting that the military on Fort Hood aren't armed. You know, the United States military doesn't trust its own soldiers to be armed on a military base. One of the reasons that Hassan was able to kill so many is that it took a female police officer who was called on the scenes from off the base to finally put him down. She shot him, didn't kill him, made him paralyzed, however. It is fairly odd, though, that we would not allow our military to be armed on a military base. But anyway, Staff Sergeant Sean Manning was shot 6 times on November 5th of 2009. I mean, think of this. This was now nearly four years ago, and this case has not come to trial. Now, 4 years ago, and this is in the military, where, you know, you can bring a court-martial proceeding in a matter of months. What is the U.S. government so embarrassed about, so desirous of having people not know? Are they going to do the same thing here that they do in so many cases where they don't want people to consider the evidence, to hope the man cops a plea so that they don't have to put on evidence and people can see that this was an act of Islamic terrorism? Well, this is what Staff Sergeant Sean Manning told Fox News. He said, the government has tried to deny this was an act of terrorism. Okay, Sean, you got half of that right. You recognize the government is trying to deny, and that is why this case has not come to trial. That is why the government, I'm certain, told Fox News not to print the contents of the letter that Hassan released. But this concept that it was an act of terrorism is brain dead, Sean. It was an act of Islam. Are we going to make Islam and terrorism synonymous? If we are, why don't we just call it an act of Islam? They have a word for it, Sean. It's called jihad. I think that, this is Sean speaking again, I hope that if people hear the words from Hassan's own mouth, they will understand that this was an act of terrorism. Come on, Sean, it was an act of Islam. He was a jihadist. But so here is Sean Manning saying to Fox News, print it. Disgorge everything that he said. People will at least understand why he was screaming Allahu Akbar as he was killing us. That's what the government doesn't want you to know. He had that part right. Manning first spoke to Fox News a year ago as part of the network's ongoing investigation into the massacre. So Fox News says they're doing an ongoing investigation. They get a seven-page manifesto from the shooter, and they won't publish it. Great. So we continue in this article. We find that Manning said that he supported the publishing of the documents from Hassan so the American people can decide. Fort Hood was an act of terrorism, or was it an act of workplace violence? See, the United States government is trying to spin it as an act of workplace violence. Therefore, they can say, oh, we are doing a wonderful job of defending you. And therefore, they don't have to admit that the problem is Islam. Manning, who will testify at the trial and is part of a separate legal action, says that the victims and their families are being denied certain benefits and pay because Fort Hood is not considered terrorism. So if the government were to announce that, you know, this was an act of terrorism, then the victims would receive benefits. But the government says, no, this was just an act of workplace violence. Hassan was just an ordinary guy. Like, he went postal on you. That's all there is to it. Our government almost always makes the irrational and immoral decision. At the same time, the accused shooter has collected nearly $300,000 in military pay since his arrest. So after shooting and killing, I think it was 12 people, the murderer has received $300,000 in military pay since pulling the trigger and killing those people. Is our government screwed up or what? Some of the survivors and some of the deceased or family members of the deceased are struggling. I don't think that the deceased are struggling, but the family members of the deceased are struggling. They think it's a grave injustice. It breaks my heart to see things like that happen, Manning said. Yep. So the victims, this is why you do not want to enlist in the U.S. military. The victims of this jihadi act by Hassan are being mistreated by the U.S. government, while the U.S. government has paid $300,000 to the Islamic murderer. And the U.S. government wants to deceive the American people about the motivation for the murders. This little they did, I think three or four sentences, even those being redacted, that they printed from the manifesto from seven pages. I, Nadel Malak Hassan, am compelled to renounce any oaths of allegiance that require me to support or defend man-made constitutions like the Constitution of the United States over the commandments mandated in Islam. I therefore formally renounce my oath of office, ... redacted. This includes my oath of U.S. citizenship. So Mr. Hassan has decided, as all fundamentalist Muslims do, that the law of Allah, which, by the way, is nothing more than the edicts of Muhammad and the example of Muhammad, since Allah doesn't actually exist, that they are mandated, and therefore he cannot be a U.S. citizen. In another document, Hassan declared, American democracy and Sharia law are incompatible. But democracy, which infers choice, and Islam, which means submission, are incompatible. And therefore, Sharia law, which is based upon Muhammad's words and deeds, and democracy, even being civil, are incompatible. Muhammad was a mass murderer. He was a ruthless terrorist. He was a pedophile. He was incestuous. He was a rapist. He was a slave trader. He was a kidnapper for ransom. And he was a thief. He was an avowed liar. If you look at Muhammad's behavior during the first 10 years of the Islamic era, he would rank as one of the most repulsive people to ever live. And so, yes, Sharia law, which is based upon Muhammad's words and deeds, is incompatible with any form of civil behavior. He then wrote, there is an inherent and irreconcilable conflict, redacted, 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 in an American democracy. We people govern, we the people govern according to what the people think is right or wrong, even if it specifically goes against what Almighty God commands. Now, he didn't write Almighty God. He wrote Almighty Allah, and they even changed that. So the part that really gets into the heart of Islam, they simply redacted. They say they're investigators, and they can't even produce evidence when it's thrown in their lap. It's pathetic. And this is Fox News. Dr. Timothy Furnish, an expert in Islamic history, told Fox News after reviewing the documents that they appear to be an after-the-fact attempt to explain himself. He is now trying to put the sort of personal jihad that he was involved in, trying to put it into a larger religious and sort of geopolitical context and justify what is doing perhaps in a sense to himself and also, I think, in large measure to folks in the Islamic world, the Al-Qaeda's and others who approve of what he did, he said. Boy, he's not very articulate, not very smart either. No, he was simply laying down the reality that Sharia law and democracy are incompatible. That being a fundamentalist Muslim and being a citizen of any country is incompatible. That's what he said. That happens to be true. How could you, as a professor of Islamic history, not understand that he's simply telling you the truth? He's not trying to put this into a geopolitical context. He's not trying to put it into a larger religious context. He's explaining his actions based upon what he knows about Islam. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. I'd like to expose another moron. This is Thomas Jocelyn. He's a senior fellow with the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies. I suppose that Thomas Jocelyn doesn't even know there is no democracy in the world today, but nonetheless he wishes to defend them. This is what the idiot said. He's speaking now of Hassan's letter. He's clearly saying that he's a homegrown extremist. No, he's clearly saying he's a fundamentalist Muslim. He's not an extreme anything. He's a fundamentalist, which is the antithesis of extreme. Fundamental means right at the core. Extreme means out there on the fringe. He's explaining to you what it means to be a fundamentalist Muslim. And this idiot, Thomas Jocelyn, says he's telling you that he's an extremist. And then he says homegrown. It's not homegrown. Bred through Islam. He is a victim of Islam. He didn't corrupt the religion. The religion corrupted him. He says that he's someone who identifies with Al-Qaeda's ideology. He didn't say that he identified with Al-Qaeda's ideology. He claims that he identifies with Allah teaching and Muhammad's example. That's what he said he identified with. He identifies with the Quran and the Hadith. I mean, when we have quote-unquote experts being cited by moronic news sources like Fox News that are presenting this kind of rubbish, that when people even have just little tidbits of evidence to deny what the evidence says, is it any wonder that we don't get it as a nation? Is it any wonder that this religion will end up destroying this country? Well, this particular idiot, Thomas Jocelyn, said, quote, he's somebody who definitely reached out to an Al-Qaeda cleric. There are no Al-Qaeda clerics. They're Islamic clerics. Al-Qaeda is not a religion. You can't have an Al-Qaeda cleric. There is no such thing. There never will be. There never has been. And who decided he was going to take up Al-Qaeda's cause here on American soil. He told you in his writings that he was taking up Allah's cause. Allah's cause is defined throughout the Quran. Why don't you read it, Thomas Jocelyn? Allah's cause is one of the major themes in the Medinan surahs, the last 24 that were revealed. In those surahs, it is a call to Allah's cause, which is jihad. And jihad is holy fighting, killing all non-Muslims and all peaceful Muslims in Allah's cause. Allah's cause is killing all those who do not submit to him. That's what he wrote. That's what he did. It is stunning that we are in this kind of a situation. Here's another report also from the Islamic World, Dateline Washington. As violence and political turmoil tear through a war-wrecked Iraq. I wonder how Iraq became war-wrecked. Let's see. How did Iraq become war-wrecked? Oh, yeah, the United States invaded. Ah, I remember that. Military experts are warning Congress that Al-Qaeda-affiliated terrorist cells are regrouping and working together not only in Iraq, but the entire region to undo a decade of U.S.-led progress. A decade of U.S.-led progress. We invaded Iraq when there wasn't any Al-Qaeda influence in Iraq. Saddam Hussein and Osama bin Laden were arch enemies. They hated one another. In fact, it was Osama bin Laden that wanted to have the Saudis empower him to attack and his mujahideen to attack Iraq. They were mortal enemies. The Al-Qaeda presence as a Islamic club did not materialize in Iraq until after our invasion. We made Al-Qaeda in Iraq. Prior to the American invasion, zero influence of Al-Qaeda in Iraq. America invades, and now you have Al-Qaeda influence in Iraq. So if that's progress, great. If it's progress that we killed a million Iraqis, we didn't directly kill a million Iraqis. A million Iraqis died because of our invasion. So indirectly, we killed a million Iraqis. We squandered $6 trillion. That was great progress. We broke a country that was actually functioning. We went into a country that had an average of 1 to 3 terrorist events a year that killed a half a dozen people. And we left that country such that tens of thousands of people are being killed by terrorist acts that are being perpetrated every day. Yeah, great progress. We'll return to this story and the American spin on the mess that we created in a moment. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. It is astonishing that you could have this Dateline Washington from a major news publication, I believe this one is the New York Times, talk about how that the United States made a major contribution to the entire region, but in Iraq in particular, and that now Al-Qaeda-affiliated terrorist cells are regrouping, and that's going to undo a decade of U.S.-led progress. Think of all the errors in that. The regrouping says that we went in there to fight Al-Qaeda, when that is a bold-faced lie. There was absolutely no Al-Qaeda influence in Iraq when we invaded. And the regrouping also says that Al-Qaeda is responsible for the majority of the suicide bombings that are taking place in Iraq that are killing people at an unprecedented rate. That's also untrue. It's strictly sectarian violence. You've got Sunni Muslims who don't like what was imposed on them when the U.S. government said one person, one vote, threw out Saddam Hussein and put in a government that was loyal to Tehran. And so the Shia Muslims are using American weapons to repress and to kill Sunni Muslims, and the Sunni Muslims are responding and killing Shia Muslims via suicide attacks. Asymmetrical, to be sure, but that's because of the U.S. weaponry. Talk about progress. We broke the country. We didn't fix the country. And then when we left the country, we gave the country to Iran. It was Iran's enemy, and now it is Iran's real estate. Some progress, huh? This is a quote from a Lieutenant Colonel Anthony Schaffer. He says, "We left Iraq on the edge of being stable." We intervened in Iraq. It was stable. We broke it. There was absolutely no semblance of stable when we left. As a matter of fact, the means that we used to leave is the very reason that we're having this civil war now be so deadly. We decided in our military that we would provide arms to the Sunni Muslims so that they could counteract the terrorism that was being imposed upon them by the Shia Muslims that we had given so much advanced weaponry to. And so we called it the Awakening Programs, and we armed the Sunni Muslims via their tribal leaders and warlords. And that is the very powder keg that we left in Iraq. At the time, I said, this awakening program is absolutely suicidal. This is what it's going to lead to. It was obvious it would lead to this. And these idiots think, oh, boy, we were on the cusp of having it stable as we were arming both sides to go kill one another. This fellow, Colonel Anthony Schaffer, is a former military intelligence officer. Now, that tells you the level of intelligence that we have in the U.S. military. Why in the world do we allow the most powerful weapons in the universe to be wielded by an organization that can't think? Well, saying it's clear that the job was not done, yeah, we made a mess in Iraq. The job was not done. He wants to infer that, oh, boy, if we just stayed there a little longer, if we just listened to play war a little longer, oh, everything would have been just fine. We would have finished the job. I'm here to tell you that we could have remained in Iraq for 100 years with 100 million troops. And that job could never have been done. So long as Islam was the predominant force in Iraq, just like it is in Afghanistan, there is no way to do the job. He warned that Al-Qaeda, as an entity, is coming back strong within the region and is doing things to destabilize governments, which at this point in time are still friendly to us. Now, what's interesting here is that in Pakistan today, the Secretary of State says, you know, we're going to end the drone killings very, very soon. He says, because, you know, we've really wiped out the Taliban. We've already wiped out Al-Qaeda. We've really wiped them out. There's nothing left to, no one left to kill. And now he's saying that they're coming back very strong. They really ought to get their cards together so that their notes together so they're speaking out of the same hymnal. The fact is that Al-Qaeda didn't exist in Iraq. They only materialized in Iraq as an opportunity to go kill Americans, which they did a very good job. Between Iraq and Afghanistan, we lost about 10,000. In other words, we sacrificed 3,000 more, three times more lives in our response to 9/11 than Muslims killed in 9/11. That was brilliant. And this notion that it is Al-Qaeda that is driving this, as opposed to the exact same fight that we're seeing before our eyes in Syria, Sunni Shia, is the epitome of stupid. On Thursday, Iraq's parliament speaker painted a grim picture of a crumbling country that is taking another beating. The situation here is very grave, the parliament speaker said. He believes that the recent spikes in sectarian, that would be religious, Sunni versus Shia violence, coupled with the political instability, are fueling concerns that the country will soon be pushed into another civil war. We made that happen. The United States invasion of Iraq is wholly responsible for it, for the empowerment of Iran because we gave Iraq to Iran, for the completion of the Iranian nuclear program, for the proxy war now that is going on in Syria that has left 100,000 people dead, many times that number of women raped is a direct consequence of us going in and invading a country and breaking it. This story was published simultaneously with the last one. Casualty figures released by the UN mission in Baghdad suggest that 1,057 Iraqis were murdered in July, making it the most violent month in years. At least 4,137 civilians have been killed and 9,865 injured so far this year. The impact of violence on civilians remains disturbingly high. Welcome to the world of Islam. Iraq's political leaders must take immediate and decisive action to stop the senseless bloodshed, the UN High Commissioner said. Well, the senseless bloodshed is a direct derivative of the conflict between Shia and Sunni Islam. So, how in the world can you come up with a political solution to a religious problem, dear UN High Commissioner? A wave of violence has swept Iraq in the last 6 months, with Sunni Islamist militants targeting Shia districts. In July, there was a series of bombings in the streets, cafes, and mosques. Militants also broke into two prisons, setting inmates free. Yeah, Abu Ghraib was one of them. Here's what's happened. Our inability to count and inability to do any demographics decided we were going to kill a secular dictator and who had been a friend to the United States and an enemy to Iraq, and we were going to replace him with a democratic government, one person, one vote. But we couldn't figure out that 2/3 of the Iraqis were Shia Muslims, and that the leaders of Shia Islam in Iraq all came from Iran and were unified with the Iranian mullahs. We didn't figure that part out. So when the Muslims were told by their imams whom to vote for, they all did as a unified bloc, and the most fundamentalist candidates won. The Shiite candidates all won. And now the Shiites, armed with American weapons, decided that they would do what Shia Muslims do to Sunni Muslims when they have the opportunity: kill them, torment them, oppress them. And so the Sunni Muslims have done what Sunni Muslims do when Shia Muslims torment them and kill them. They strike back, killing them. That is the mess that the United States created by invading Iraq. Mr. Bustin in Baghdad is acting as a special representative for the UN. Secretary General Ban Ki-moon said that the toll for July was the highest month in more than 5 years. So the situation is getting worse. He characterized the prior period as the peak of anti-U.S. insurgency in 2007 as one filled with blind rage of sectarian strife, blind rage of religious strife. Oh, welcome to the world of Islam. Islam creates blind rage. Iraq's governments must prevent these dark days from returning. You know, what's interesting is that we all want to measure things against whatever standard that we can take out of context and say, well, you know, it's not quite as bad as it was then. But, you know, when we invaded Iraq, terrorism essentially did not exist. And then after our invasion, terrorism ultimately reached a feverish pitch in Iraq. And we are now returning to those conditions. So the media wants you to think, well, you know, it's not as bad as it was, so we're making progress. Well, that's to say that we created a disaster, and the disaster now is at the current level, although it is increasing again, is only about half of the worst of the disaster that we created. Here's the numbers. There were 928 civilians that were murdered in July, and 2,109 civilians were injured in just the month of July. Many of these provinces are dominated by members of the country's Sunni minority, many of whom resent the Shia-led government that took power after Saddam Hussein was toppled in 2003. If you want to know what's wrong with Iraq, all you have to do is look what happened after the United States foolishly deposed that secular dictator. As bad as he was, everything in Iraq was better under his dictatorship than it is today. This is an interesting, albeit somewhat related story. Mexican cartels are recruiting hitmen from the U.S. military, offering big money to highly trained soldiers to carry out contract killings and potentially share their skills with the cartels south of the border, according to law enforcement experts. This particular article goes on to list example after example after example of U.S. soldiers, many officers, having returned from Iraq and Afghanistan, now trained in combat techniques, being paid by the cartels, often in drugs, to go and kill for them. You know, there is a mentality that goes along with those who want to go play war that doesn't come out of the warrior when they return home, and they don't really care who they're fighting for. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. This is an interesting story. This is a story of in the middle of this article, they detail lots of U.S. Army officers and enlisted men that have joined the Mexican drug cartels as their hitmen. One such individual is Corley. He was on a combat team in the 4th Infantry Division in Afghanistan between 2010 and 11. Shortly thereafter, he was put undercover with the DEA as an agent in Mexico. According to his plea agreement, Corley was introduced to undercover agents posing as members of Los Zetas cartel in September of 2011, immediately upon his return from Afghanistan. He admitted to being an active duty officer in the U.S. Army who was responsible for training soldiers. He told his contact, who he thought was Los Zetas, the drug cartel, that he could provide tactical training for members of the cartel, and that he could purchase weapons for them. In later meetings, Corley discussed stealing weapons from military posts and also deploying military tactics to do so. Then in December of 2011, he agreed to perform a contract killing for the cartel in exchange for $50,000 and cocaine. What the article then talks about, in addition to naming many other U.S. officers and enlisted men who are under contract by the drug cartels, is that American street gangs, both Hispanic and African American street gangs, have infiltrated the U.S. military, and that they have an extraordinarily large and pervasive footprint in the U.S. military and have for years, and that the U.S. military itself is plagued with problems associated with gang affiliation within the, particularly within the enlisted ranks. But what is interesting is that after telling us that these various gangs in the United States and in the U.S. military are vying with each other to win the favor of the drug cartels to see who can be the best kidnapper, who can be the best murderer, who can do the most mayhem, the article says that part of the reason that these soldiers are now killing for the drug cartels is that they were poorly paid by the U.S. government. Now, one of these guys, Corley himself, the one that they make the primary example of, was paid $4,500 a month. But understand, that's $4,500 clear a month. That means that, you know, his food and his housing was paid for by the U.S. government. He cleared, on top of his housing and food, $4,500 a month. And because he was so underpaid, he is now working for the Los Zetas drug cartel. Pretty astonishing, huh? That's kind of the problem. When you pay people to kill, And then you bring them back home and say, I want you to integrate into normal society. After putting them in a situation in Afghanistan and in Iraq that was just absolutely criminal, where it was impossible to tell the good guys from the bad guys, where the people we were allegedly supporting were acting like savages. Under those circumstances, you try to bring somebody back and have them integrate within the society, and it's no wonder that so many are committing suicide. It's no wonder that so many are having a difficult time trying to make moral decisions after their morality has been usurped from them. There's a story that we'll go into more tomorrow, but I do want to share a bit of it with you today. The story begins, the Saudi princess and her family had crossed the globe in May with an entourage of servants and settled into a labyrinth of upscale communities that dot Orange County. Then one of the servants darted out of the complex and flagged down a bus. The Kenyan woman clutched a pamphlet that she had been given by the American embassy in Saudi Arabia. It warned those who would start working for the Saudi Arabian royal family that there was dangers in human trafficking. Within hours, the woman was telling the police the story of a modern-day slave, and the detectives descended upon Central Park West and arrested the princess. Well, the fact of the matter is that people in Orange County said that they were shocked that someone's personal liberties could be violated this way, that someone could be enslaved in this modern world. And yet, the evidence for this is everywhere. It is dominates the news out of Saudi Arabia. There are countries like Kenya, is for an example, and many others in northern Africa have signed agreements to say that you as a worker, as a citizen of this country, can't go to those countries, and forbids the Saudi Arabians from employing them because they don't employ them. They enslave them and they torture them. We'll return to Shattering This after the commercial break.